Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I gotta love the fact that the Trump tantrum tour has hit the fair state of Pennsylvania. Another group therapy for the angry white people who feel entitled, that they feel cheated. And look, you watch the crowd of them. I watched the hearing. All angry middle-aged white people who they're the believe crowd. They're the folks who truly believe that Joe Biden during the pandemic was in the basement learning coding, and he figured out how to hack into the machines and steal the votes. And again, I keep throwing it back out there. If he did learn how to do this, do you think he had maybe given us a better margin than just winning by 68,000 votes while the Libertarian got 78,000 votes? Do you think he'd have figured that out and maybe given himself a couple of Senate seats? I don't know. Anyway, the special edition of our program today, it's been such a great period from Election Day till now. Comedy might be back because Rudy Giuliani is giving us tons of it. That's why I've got a great opportunity to reach out to Steve Hofstetter. He's a fantastic comedian. He's the guy that I fall into the rabbit hole over. Anytime I see his videos, it's 45 minutes later, I've wasted and spent down the rabbit hole. So, Steve, I appreciate you taking some time for us.
Well, thanks, Rick. I had all this time now that my check to George Soros cleared. You know, so I say these conspiracy nuts, man. I don't know. You can't teach a dumb person smart things. It's impossible. But the idea of why didn't we take the Senate? Why didn't we take more Congress? Like, if this is all, fixed in a sham, and it's also every single accusation of it, and you got Rudy yelling from the rooftops, and then you go, okay, Rudy, well, how? What proof do you have? And it's like, well, nothing, but they did stuff. Okay, great.
And my other thing is, and I keep coming back to this with the sane, rational Trump supporters that I know, because there are a couple of them. They're more Republicans. They're the faithful. They pull the lever no matter who it is. If you truly believe this, why have a hearing in Gettysburg today instead of in front of a judge at a courtroom? If you really have facts and this is really true, then swear on the Bible you claim to love so much. Tell the truth, present your facts, and let's really go get them. If Joe Biden did learn coding, I want to know how he did it, because I'd like to learn. And two, let's hold him accountable.
It's very, very silly. The best is, like, so many of the things that they're claiming, like they claim, oh, the dead people voted. And you find out in Georgia, the people that Trump was tweeting about, the dead people who voted, they were just people who had the same name as a dead person.
Yep.
It's a state of 10 million people. That happens. That absolutely happens. Hell, there are two idiots named Donald Trump. So it can happen.
Seriously? Do we have to have two of them? No, and to be honest, that whole same name thing, I know they get wrong. Is exactly how Republicans were able to steal the election in 2000 and how they were trying to steal this election by kicking a bunch of people off the voting rolls, claiming they had registered twice. Chris Kobach and his cross-check is something we've talked about, at length here with our friend Greg Palast, who's been all over this since 2000 in the Voting While Black scandal.
It's just utterly ridiculous. And I think the reason that you have these believe always Trumpers is because for the last 4 years, he's been their identity. That's who they are. They are Trump people, and now they got to go find another identity. What are they going to do? Become a Ted Nugent person? A James Woods person? Like, they got to find someone else.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no one quite as entertaining as Trump. I mean, honestly, the last 4 years, and I said this on Inauguration Day, it's going to be this next 4 years is going to be horrible. It's going to be all about Trump, and it's going to be so bad that we're gonna block it out of our mind at the end. And I'm looking forward to blocking these last 4 years out of my mind.
I'm frankly looking forward to the trials, but those should be fun.
Do you really think they're going to be trials? I got to be honest, while I do want to see, a long line of perp walks, and I want to see a lot of shiny bracelets handed out and some hotel accommodations at the Gray Bar Hotel, I'm just not seeing it. I just don't see Joe Biden going down that path.
Oh, I don't think Joe Biden's going to do it. I think New York's going to do it. I think the states are going to do it. Because if Biden wants to preach the kumbaya, we should all get along, and he's not progressive anyway, like, if that's going to happen, okay. I think that's still 50-50. But I don't see the Southern District of New York going anywhere. I don't see Manhattan going anywhere.
Yeah, I hope so. I would love to see a Trump wing on Rikers. I think they're closing Rikers. Maybe we could reopen it just for the Trumps.
Yeah. Well, and not only that, but you've also got, you know, these millions of dollars of debt. We're going to probably find out who that goes to. Twitter's going to shut his account down. There's going to be retribution piece by piece, and I am all here for it.
Yeah, me too. And that's where the fun's going to begin because, you know, during this whole COVID thing, you as a professional comedian, you've got to be losing your mind because, well, no crowds, no stand-up shows. I know you guys are doing the online stuff, and in fact, you've got an event tonight, right?
Yeah. I do digital shows during all this, which has kind of kept me sane, kept me part of a community, kept me feeling like an artist. And so I do those at Nowhere Comedy. And I'm doing a full stand-up set tonight, and then actually December 10th, I'm doing a special show at the Director's Commentary Show, where I go through my best heckler clips of Trump fans. Like, that's the theme of the show, and I go through and kind of break down each clip live with other comedians.
They're fabulous, and you know, like I said at the beginning, you're one of the people that, you know, I fall into a rabbit hole whenever I see something of yours, because they're funny as hell. But you know, over your career, and you've been doing this a while, have you noticed a change in the crowds? I mean, you know, I've been going to comedy clubs since the mid '80s, and you know, I remember, you know, people, you know, you'd have one idiot. Usually one drunken moron who was just trying to, you know, get up on the person, and then the comedian would just rip him to shreds and everyone would enjoy that. But, you know, I've seen some of these other things where the rooms are changing, and it seems, or I guess you'd be the expert. Do you see the rooms changing where maybe there's more than just one idiot now?
Not necessarily. I think that, you know, part of it has to do with whether the comedian is a draw or not. I dealt with more idiots when nobody knew who I was. Because people would just go to see comedy, and they wouldn't care what kind of comedy it was, and then there are different brands and genres of comedy. The same way that you don't just go, hey, let's go see music. Opera, hip-hop, it's all the same. Different. And so, you know, stand-up has different genres as well. You know, now that my crowd is mainly who's there to see me, it's less frequent than it used to be. You know, usually if there's a drunken idiot, it's someone who came along with somebody. You know, oh, I got four tickets, and it turned out I only have one friend. So I gave them to two people at work, and it turns out this Cassie lady's an idiot. So that's how it happened.
That's good to hear, because I'm sitting here, and I'm going, you know, half the country's crazy at this point, and I can't imagine what that looks like from your perspective, because you're somebody who you touch on a lot of political issues that are the, you know, the hot button issues of the day. In fact, you know, the one video I watched, you were talking about gay marriage and abortion in Indiana, and I'm going, wow, some balls on that guy.
Well, I appreciate that, but also remember, Bill Clinton used to be seen as a progressive.
No, like, not by me. No.
Well, not by you, but I'm saying, like, the idea that, you know, the country's suddenly crazy. We've been a very conservative country for a very long time. Look who we've elected in the past. We are slowly evolving, and so we're just finding out who the demons are now. But, you know, if you look at our history, people, this blew my mind when I did the math on this. People who are older than 29 years old were born closer to the Civil Rights Act than they were today. That is how recent this is.
Right. No, I mean, that's, yeah, I still remember, you know, I grew up in Cleveland, which was at the time, you know, back in the 70s, was a very racially segregated city. The sad part for me at the time was I was the lone white kid in a predominantly black neighborhood. We used to play this neat game called Chase the White Kid and beat the crap out of him. I was on the wrong side of that segregation.
Well, I lived in Boston for a couple months in 2002, and it was still pretty segregated. society. Shut up. We're still dealing with all this stuff. Some of it's just come to the forefront now. Some of it still hasn't come to the forefront. It's going to take a while.
Yeah. And it's going to be painful and ugly, and we're in that moment right now, which is, you know, part of what Trump's appeal obviously was. It gave, license to those people who have been quiet racists for a long time. But, how do you explain the rest of them? Because, I know some of, the Trump supporters, and I don't think they're all racist. I think some of them are crazy. I think some of them are, gun nuts who, fantasize about shooting people. But I don't know that they're racist.
Well, they're not all racist, but they're all one-issue voters. Like, you wouldn't support Trump if you weren't a one-issue voter. And that issue might be guns, and that issue might be racism, and that issue might be sexism, and that issue might be homophobia, and that issue might be... There's all kinds of... Or that issue might even be just self-interest if you're a very rich person. Like... There's a million one-issue people, or not million, there's 80 or 70 million one-issue people that support him. But I don't think there's anyone who can even finish a sentence who has looked at him and said, that guy's rational and measured, and I think he will be calm in a room.
Yeah, I've never met anyone who says that. I've met a lot of people who've given me the, he says the things that I'm thinking stuff. And I'm going, that makes you crazy because I can barely follow what he says. So if that's what you're actually thinking, I really want to know how your mind works.
Yeah. It's the, Chris Bowers has a great joke about how, let's say you believe all the QAnon crazy. Let's say you believe that's all true. When you look at Trump, you go, this is the guy that's going to save us from this? How would anyone look at him, listen to him, and think, oh, yeah, he's the one who's going to save us?
Yeah, this is the one God sent for us.
Yeah, there are plenty of politicians over the years I've disagreed with, but there's never been one that I have been less impressed.
Yeah, I've been impressed with his ability to reach those who haven't. I called his victory in April of 16 when I returned back to Cleveland, where I grew up, and for a funeral, and met my family, who otherwise you would call the basket of deplorables. And all of them, for the first time in their lives, were rushing to register the vote. He had tapped into something with them that finally got them off their asses to go and register and actually vote. And I said at that time, I go, this guy's going to win, because he's getting the people who they haven't participated before. He's getting them out. And look, this election cycle, he even got more of those people out. So I'm really concerned the direction of our country at this moment, more so than I was then.
Well, I have been emboldened and encouraged by midterm elections and things like that. But when he won in 2016, I kept seeing all these interviews with, the forgotten voters, as they would call them, and the people who felt like they were underserved. And they would find someone in rural Pennsylvania, and they would talk to him about, I don't have a job, and all the jobs are gone, and I'm voting for him because I want to get a job. And I look at that, and I just say, the reason the jobs are gone there is because A, you now need a diploma to get one. B, the factories are moving into bigger cities because there's more of a workforce. C, you don't just get handed a job because you're a white man. There are now women and non-white people in the workforce that are competing for those jobs. And instead of looking at oneself and say, okay, I've been at the same job for 30 years. Are there other skills I could learn? Or could I move closer to a factory that I can work at? Instead, they just blame some mystical thing for why there's no job and not actually look at why.
Yeah, I mean, there's also a bunch of reasons outside of that. The fact that our trade policies, and this is where, Trump did touch on some things that even I agreed with. Our trade policies are horrible. The way we allow China to walk all over us is a huge part of it. Deindustrialization was real. The breaking up of unions, of which I'm a huge supporter, that has, for the last 50 years, that has, led to the decline of workers having economic power to fight back and this stuff. And, I understand their anger. It's just that they put their faith in somebody who was actually going to make it worse. And look, in a lot of the communities where he went to, it is actually worse. You go to, in northeastern Ohio, it's actually worse. The Lordstown plant is gone. You go into, into West Virginia, it's actually worse because the coal mining jobs have gone completely away. So, he identified the problem and did nothing.
But, Rick, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that overall, there are more jobs. Overall, there's a higher percentage of the workforce working.
Correct.
The problem is the specific jobs that they were trained on might be gone, or the specific factory where they worked at might be gone, the specific building where they worked at might be gone. And that's all true. But that doesn't mean that they can't ever get a job again. Like, the amount of people who started in print journalism that now work online. There are people who, we always fight to protect these dying industries without realizing that every time an industry dies, a new one takes its place.
Correct.
And when we talk about, automation is going to destroy a lot of jobs, sure is. And it's going to create a lot of different ones. What we need to do is we need to have actual leadership that is right now training people who drive trucks for a living, because in 10 years that job won't exist, and so they need to train those people for other jobs.
And I'm one of those truck drivers. I've been saying this for the last 10 years. Get ready for it, because in the next decade, the long-haul trucking industry is over. I don't know that they get rid of the short-haul, the local guys yet, but the long-haul guys where you're going coast to coast, those days are going to be those are numbered. And you're right. How do we, because we haven't discussed, what's going to happen when this tsunami of job losses happens? How do we train people for the next generation of work? Because look, and I'm sure you know people like this as well. There are folks who've gone through college to get outdated skills that are hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt that they're never going to pay off. And then you're going to tell them we got to go and retrain you for something else. We've got to make education affordable and available.
Absolutely true. And, that is something that is, I got lucky in that I was able to pay my student loan debt off. And the idea of the people now going, well, I worked to pay mine off, so why should we forgive other people? It's like, well, but also you worked to pay yours off at a time when housing was more affordable. And you worked to pay yours off at a time where, minimum wage meant more. It was the same number, but it had better buying power. And so I'm tired of people wanting to slam the door after they walk through it.
And we see that a lot, don't we? I mean, there's a lot of people who, born on third base think they hit a triple. I did it, so should everybody else.
100%. I mean, hell, there are a lot of people on third base who, they were born on third base, and they think they hit a home run.
Yeah, well, they end up back on second somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
And still think they're. Doesn't this play to our egos though? And one of the things that I think that the right wing has done masterfully is they've taken the marginally educated, they've taken people who aren't like, look at your average Trump rally, and told them how brilliant they are, how smart they are, how patriotic they are, how much they love God more than everyone else, and how they're better than everyone, which is playing out in the hearing in Gettysburg today, where you've got all these entitled white people just beyond themselves that Trump lost and finding every reason in the book to say that somehow Joe Biden cheated. I just think they do a much better job of propping people up.
Well, they do. The other way to say that is lying. They do. But what they also do a better job of is not eating their own. That is something to get better at. The left needs to realize that, I don't know what your rules are here.
Yeah, there are no rules.
Okay, cool. Because one of the things that I try to explain to people is that, a candidate is public transportation. You're not trying to fuck a candidate. It's not, they're not, they don't need to be perfect. They need to get you from point to point. And on the left, there's this constant, well, I agree with 99% of their platform, but they said that one thing 35 years ago.
Yeah.
Keep doing that. You have to understand that sometimes the matter of what is the best choice in front of us, and we will work toward our actual.
No, and that's an excellent point because, you know, the Republicans do that masterfully. Just look at Trump. He came out and said, you know, we're going to go after abortion. We're going to go after immigrants. We're going to do all the things, all those evil, hateful, angry things you want. But forget about my three marriages. Forget about, you know, the fact that I want to bang my daughter. Forget about all that stuff. All the, you know, the rape allegations. Forget, grab her by the you-know-what. Forget about paying off the porn star. Forget about all that stuff. I'm going to do your priorities. And they put all of that aside and said, you're our guy. And not just you're our guy, but we're literally to go in front of cameras and cry and carry on and carry, literally carry the Trump flag.
Yeah. That was the one that made me laugh and or cry the most. The idea of these people who are driving around with these flags. I'm a huge Mets fan. I love the Mets. I've never, ever outfitted my car with a Mets flag. There's never been a time.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter when they were in the World Series. It doesn't matter. I've never been outside of myself that much to put my faith in something outside of me that much that I needed to have a flag the size of a car aim for my car and damaging my window.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. But, you know, I've got neighbors who, you know, the house is adorned with flags. You know, they've got flags everywhere. And you go, one, you know, how much disposable income do you have that you can just piss it away on these flags that I'm hoping Trump has at least got some back deal to help him pay his bills. But then again, he doesn't really need it because people are donating money to him under the guise of he's going to be fighting to win the campaign while he's paying off his debts.
Well, I mean, and that was something also, like I tweeted when there was that that stupid GoFundMe for the wall.
Yeah.
I tweeted this whole breakdown of it where I was like, ignore the fact that this person has a history of being a con man. Let's say you believe them, okay? And you believe that they truly want to do this. Do the math on it. And, you know, when they raised $3 million a day and they were so excited, I was like, you'd have to do that for 54 years. And that's on the lowest estimate of cost. And that's also if they're not factoring in inflation, not factoring in cost of materials, you know, not factoring any of that stuff. It would still take 54 years of your highest day of donation. Why are you doing this? Because you're idiots. And then you're going to give $100 to this, and then you're going to complain that you don't have any money to spend on anything else. You're going to complain that you're out of work, and you're spending $100 on building a wall that will never get built, and the con man keeping it.
Yep. I remember the couple of days into that campaign, you know, this woman tweeted out that they were looking for $5 billion and they got like $4 million, and you know she tweeted out, you know, we've got not almost 90% of our goal, and I had to remind her that there's a difference between there's a couple of zeros missing between million and billion. You're nowhere near 90%, honey. But
now they got near 90% of 1%.
Yeah,
that's a pretty. Yeah,
it's impressive, though. On a certain level, that it is impressive, because I would have never donated a dime.
Yeah, I did some fundraising for some candidates this year, but it's rare that a candidate moves me enough that I give them money. You know?
I do a couple of candidates, especially local ones. I've never given to a presidential candidate. They've got billionaires for that. But for the local elections, you know, for my local state rep, my local state rep is literally crazy. And my local congressional representative is now being the face of the coup here in Pennsylvania, Scott Perry, who is, you know, the military face, I guess, that we're putting on this, which is scary as hell. But what is it about us as a country that, you know, as soon as they slap the flag in our face and, you know, put somebody out in front of a uniform, we're supposed to immediately go, oh, yeah, that's patriotism. That's patriotism. We can't question that.
It's an ad campaign. That's what it is. It is a very, very successful ad campaign. it is, you know, the military machine has been advertising during football games and baseball games, and, you know, every one of those, hey, we have a military hero here today, is a paid advertising spot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel like a pretty informed person. I didn't even know that until like 5 years ago.
Yeah,
they always like, oh, that's a thing they do.
Yeah, they kept that quiet pretty well. As where I know that everything, you know, you do anything in entertainment, everything is monetized. Every single thing that's out there, every shtick, every performance, every, hey, look at the blimp up in the sky, everything's monetized and they're cashing in on it, or they wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, and, you know, unfortunately, it's just something that people believe in now, and it's going to be hard to separate it from that. The same way that, like, all this Confederate statue stuff, that was the Daughters of Confederacy.
Yeah.
So those statues did not exist during those times. Those statues were put in during the time of trying to enforce segregation and trying to prevent civil rights laws. And those statues were put in directly to do that. And then they do revisionist history, and they act as if they've been there since the 1800s.
Yeah, but you know, one of the arguments I get, especially from white people in the Midwest, who are angry at now all of a sudden we seem to care about these things. You know, how do you respond to a guy from Iowa who, you know, he doesn't know any black people. He doesn't know anything about, you know, the Civil War other than what they taught him, you know, for 15 minutes in history class in eighth grade. You know, he's never been to the South. He doesn't know anything about it. But what he knows is that they're changing history. They're rewriting our history, and they're rewriting what I learned. And, you know, why now? I mean, I've been calling out these Confederate traitors for years. You know, the sad reality is we honor people who committed treason and yet have been doing it for years without thought. So the argument is, what to him? Why does it matter now to him?
Because we learned. Like, that's what I try to tell those people. The idea of, like, well, you thought this thing before and now you think a new thing. How is that possible? And it's like, well, because we learned. And that's how learning works.
Is that how that works?
It's supposed to.
Yeah.
It's
like the mask thing. You know, I love all the current epidemiologists who failed high school biology telling me that, well, we don't have to wear a mask. In fact, masks actually make things worse.
Yeah, and they do the thing where they say, hey, you know, in March the CDC said, and it's like in March they didn't know yet. We've learned new things. We've tried new things and figured out what's worked. Like, that's how we learn to walk. That's how we learn anything. And it's all people who are, you know, they're law experts one day and then they're epidemiology experts the next day. And there are too many people who are unwilling to admit what they don't know.
As we're, you know, it's one of those questions I ask people on the scale of everything that is to possibly known. How much do you think you know? And the further to 1% that they go over, you know, then I start questioning how actually smart they are. I had somebody tell me that, well, if he doesn't know it, it's not worth knowing.
Well, that guy sounds like he's not worth knowing. But it's Dunning-Kruger. Like, Dunning-Kruger explains so many things, and it's, you know, the basic premise of Dunning-Kruger is the less experience you have with something, the less you are able to judge that thing, and thus the more you think you know about it.
Yeah, and look, you know, they're reinforced by right-wing talk radio who keeps telling them how smart they are and how, you know, here's what you need to regurgitate. And this is one of the things I've been telling people on the left, especially my labor friends, that you have to build an equal platform to compete with craziness, because I do believe people want to know things. So if you can arm them with actual facts instead of alternative facts, maybe our democracy, maybe this you know, fading republic has an actual chance to survive.
Yeah, I agree. And I was always very confused because I thought, you know, when podcasts became a big thing, I didn't understand how there were all of these, you know, alt-right idiots listening to these podcasts. How is it someone like, you know, a Ben Shapiro or a Jordan Peterson has this legion of fans? Because I would have figured that podcasts, you know, someone wanting to listen to someone talk for an hour or three or however long it is typically a more educated choice.
But a friend of mine told me a really great point where he said, oh, no, because those aren't people listening for other people's opinions. Those are people listening to find out what their opinion is.
Exactly. No, no, that's exactly what I've been saying for years. What the right wing does is it gives people their talking points for the day. It gives them things to go to the lunchroom and regurgitate. And, you know, look, I watched Limbaugh come into Cleveland back in the early 90s and watched the lunchroom change over from everybody being somewhere between the curbs, you know, politically, to one guy standing on the sidewalk throwing stuff into the middle of the street, till eventually now we're divided. Everybody's on the sidewalks and nobody is anywhere near the middle anymore. And it's dangerous and it's crazy.
Well, I think there are, you know, John Stewart had a really great point a while back about how, you know, probably about 80% of us are reasonable people with differences. It's the problem is that the 20% that aren't us are the ones that are yelling.
Yeah.
And so it seems like it's everybody, but it's not. The same way that, like, look, I am fiercely progressive, but I'm also willing to have a conversation with someone who doesn't agree with me. Now, I won't have a conversation with someone who doesn't agree with me about civil rights. Like, there are certain things I draw the line where I go, no. I'm not addressing that. I'm not addressing whether or not the earth is round. I'm not addressing whether or not, you know, vaccines are important. Like, there are certain things I draw the line on. But you want to talk classical versus Keynesian economics? I'll talk to you all day. The problem is that there are people who get tribal about it, and those are the people who yell the most.
Right. And the least they know, the more they yell. And look, this mask thing to me is kind of that dividing line at this point. You know, there was a comedian a while ago did a here's your sign thing. I don't remember who it was, but you know,
that's Bill Engvall.
Okay, you know, it was you're stupid. Here's your sign. To me, the mask is now here's your sign, and I'm watching the Pennsylvania Republican Senate hold their kangaroo hearing with Rudy Giuliani, and nobody in the room is wearing a mask. You know, I go to the grocery store and you can see almost down the line who's wearing a mask. On election day, I was standing out handing out, you know, flyers to people, you know, going to vote. And you knew who they were going to vote for by the fact of they weren't wearing a mask.
I saw one today that I mean, if it weren't so upsetting, it would make me laugh. But I was in Texas and there's this guy, you know, full cowboy regalia, comes into the gas station. You know, everything from the boots to the hat to the gun on his hip. And I'm just looking at that guy going, dude, it's the last piece of the costume. Put on the bandana. Like, what are you doing? You're cosplaying a cowboy anyway.
Yeah.
Just finish it up. Like, if I see anyone, any of these no-mask idiots next year wearing a mask on Halloween, just I'm going to rip it off their damn face.
Now that I want to see. But here's the weird thing. Maybe you'll agree or disagree with me. You know, I said from the beginning, had Trump come out and said, look, you know, we don't know what's going on. You can blame China for the virus all he wants. But this is happening. And like most viruses that you can catch, like even the flu, we know that wearing a mask helps, you know, helps tap it down. So we're suggesting that people, you know, do the very simple things that were in the Obama playbook that you were using to prop up the kitchen table. Wear the mask, stay the hell away from each other for a little bit, and, you know, wash your hands occasionally. I'm calling on my patriots. I'm calling on my flag wearers to go out and enforce that. I think he would have won in a landslide because we wouldn't be in this mess of, you know, 2,000 people dying a day right now.
Yeah, not to mention so many people that died would have voted for him.
Yeah, that's
the. It was a weird strategy to kill your own base. That was a strange one for me.
That is
like he's having all these enormous rallies, you know, 4 weeks before the election, just in time for people who go to them to catch COVID and go to the hospital. It's pretty hard to vote when you're laid up, and he's telling them not to vote mail-in.
Like, no, the mail-in thing I think was really smart. I think don't vote by mail was really smart in the argument that you're watching Giuliani and the crowd play into. Because, you know, I'm not very bright, but I do pay attention a little bit. And I knew before the election, I was telling people, prepare yourself what's going to happen election night. Trump is going to have an enormous lead here in Pennsylvania. And then over the next several days, as people like me have my vote counted, he will lose that lead. It's going to happen. It's how it's structured because the Democrats were telling everybody to stay home, mail their ballot in. I voted 2 weeks earlier, and I loved the way we went about it, and I hope we go to that way permanently. And I said, you know, every day he's going to fall further and further behind. And in fact, on election night, he was up 660,000 votes in this state and ended up losing by 68,000.
And not only that, but the GOP state legislators played into it by making states count their mail-in votes less. The only reason Arizona was kind of looked a little iffy is because that was the only state that was counting. I shouldn't say only state, but that was the only close state that was counting votes. That was counting day of votes at the same time as mail-in. So it wasn't just like, oh, a bunch more blue are coming in, that's why red came back.
But here again, you go back to this, this learning thing. You knew this is how it was going to play out, and you knew that was going to be the argument. And it's exactly how it played out. And yet, the reason Trump lost Pennsylvania, nobody in this state has bothered talking about, which is Joe Jorgensen, who got 78,000 votes that I argue would have been all Trump votes had she not been on the ballot. Because Howie Hawkins wasn't on the ballot.
No, libertarian votes typically would have gone Democrat. Especially, and I see this all the time. I have a very, very blue fan base, and so many of them were mad at me about not supporting third party.
Wow. I have never met a Democratic libertarian.
They're not Democratic libertarians. They're not even libertarians. Most of the people who vote for a libertarian presidential candidate have never voted or supported or heard of another libertarian candidate in their life. They're doing it because it makes them feel special, and they're 19 years old, and they don't understand politics.
Well, but I actually talked to people who are going to vote for the libertarian candidate who, you know, had in the past voted for Republicans. It's been my experience here in this state, and I don't know about where you're at, but the libertarians generally are, you know, angry Republicans, and the Greens are generally angry Democrats.
Oh, yeah. I mean, libertarians are much more closely aligned to Republican. But my point about, you know, voting for them for president, for instance, in 2016, the fact that people went from Bernie Sanders, a Democratic socialist, to Gary Johnson, a libertarian is the opposite of a socialist.
Right.
The political opposite. And the fact that they voted for Bernie in the primary and then Gary Johnson, it's like, oh, here's another counterculture person. It had nothing to do with their actual platforms. And I think that, and I'm not saying every libertarian voter is uninformed, obviously that's ridiculous. I'm just saying that it's a huge, the same people who wear Che Guevara's shirt and think they know anything about that movement, it's that. It's someone trying to act like they are counterculture and cool and interesting. It's Jarrett Berenstein had a really funny joke where he said, "You are a high school senior that thinks you discovered the Beatles."
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point, and I don't disagree with you. It is an excellent point. It's the same, you know, the people who supported Ron Paul, the same kind of thinking. That's the one thing I learned from 2012 when we were up in for the primaries up in New Hampshire, where I stayed in the same hotel as all the Paul bots. Who were trashing the hotel, throwing, you know, French fries down the elevator and pouring soda down there. And that was them practicing their freedom.
Yeah, exactly.
It was very twisted. So last question I've got for you, and I appreciate you taking some time for us. I'd love to have you come back and talk to us again during our regular program. But, you know, as soon as things open back up and you're going to head back into the comedy clubs, which, you know, if you're ever in this area, in the Harrisburg area, I'd love to go and see you. What do you expect? I mean, we've been away for a while. What are you kind of mentally preparing yourself for when that happens?
Well, once it's actually safe, and I'm not doing it until it's actually safe, but once it's actually safe, I think that there's going to be a renaissance. The same way that, you know, I was an American history major, and all the time we learned about what they called the Spanish flu that actually turns out probably originated in Kansas. All the time we learned about it in a way of like, boy, oh boy, didn't we not know medicine then, huh? And it's like, no, it's just something new, the same way this is new. And when you learn about the Roaring Twenties, you don't really learn why they were the Roaring Twenties. And the reason why is because they happened directly after a pandemic. The pandemic forced people to be ingenuitive when it came to technology. It created new industries. And it also created a sense of, hey, we need to celebrate life. And that's what's happening now. And whether that happens in 6 months or a year or 2 years, that's going to happen again.
I sure hope you're right, and I don't disagree again. Again, tonight, if you want to check out Steve, nowheretime.com is where you get the tickets, right?
Correct.
I hope folks will check you out. Again, one of my favorite comedians, and I appreciate you taking some time for us. Good luck on your travels.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
Yeah, you as well. Good stuff. Steve Hostetter, make sure you check out his website and also the tickets, nowheretime.com. Thanks so much. We'll see you back here. See you back here next time.